My name's John Mann, and we are meeting in the home of Kevin, my good friend Kevin. And this is our Tuesday night study. We're digressing to talk about evolution this evening. Now, I minister with Grace Community International. We have a website, www.gciweb.org. You're welcome to visit it. There are free Bible study materials. This lecture will appear on there. There's all sorts of good stuff on there. It's all free, and we don't have tracking cookies. So by downloading a Bible study that you find on there, you won't start getting emails from us every week. This is my email address. Feel free to email me, contact me with questions, things like that. You can also like us on Facebook. We have free Android and Apple apps. So you can go to the Apple App Store or the Android App Store. Type in Grace Community International. There's a cult which has changed its name to Grace Communion International. And they pay a lot of money so that as soon as you type in Grace, C-O-M-M, it'll bump to their website on the Google search engine. So you just have to stick with it and make sure it's Grace Community so you end up with us, not them. So feel free to. We send out a weekly email prayer dispatch. You can sign up for that if you'd like to receive it. So we're going to look tonight at creationism, primarily scientific and philosophical objections to Darwin's theory of evolution. It's always been my contention that the theory of evolution is not a scientific theory that resulted in a drastic change of lifestyle in Western man. Rather, it was a desire for a drastic change of lifestyle, looking for science, looking for a theory. And Darwin came up with this theory, and people who wanted to reject Western lifestyle based on Christian ethic, they love that because now they have an excuse. But from the beginning, it was and always has been pure science. Poor science. It is not good science. And the one question I always ask scientists who hold to the theory of evolution is, do you believe a scientific law can be proved and accepted outside of the application of the scientific method? And of course, they will always say no. Well, the theory of evolution has never been subjected to or brought into alignment with the scientific method. It has always existed outside of that. So it remains a theory, even though to not accept this theory will generally cause you to be excluded from the scientific community, or at least receive benign persecution. One of the things we have to remember as Christians is that creation is a continuous theme throughout the Bible. If you will look at the second handout sheet I gave you, these are verses in virtually every book of the Bible, and this is an incomplete list, that have to do with creation. So, the teaching of God the Holy Spirit in Holy Scriptures concerning creation and creationism is not just an obscure verse or two at the beginning of the Bible. It is a theme throughout Holy Scriptures. So it's going one of the arguments I'll make, and we'll see this in more detail in the second session, is that it is impossible to separate creationism from not only from Holy Scriptures, but also from the doctrines of salvation. To reject one, you have to reject the other if you're going to be consistent. The beauty of evolution, though, is that it creates a way of looking at the world and of science which does not require consistency. It's kind of a big picture view. So people who hold to evolution, they don't subject themselves to scientific proofs and the scientific method. It's just a philosophical, cosmological view of life that allows them to accept certain things with neither proofs nor consistency. And so Christian evolutionists do the same thing. I can accept the Bible, and yet I can reject creationism. And they do that with the same contradictory logic that evolutionary scientists do with the theory itself. Because really, evolution is a pure philosophical worldview. It is not science. We talk about the evolution of the automobile, don't we? The evolution of the automobile has nothing to do with automobiles independent of man advancing. Do that. We talk about the evolution of education. We talk about the evolution of dress. We talk about the evolution of lots of things. And so evolution has become a philosophical way, a mental template of viewing life, and it is not a science. It is not a science. In fact, there are many scientists, secular scientists, who question and in fact have rejected evolution. If you would like to read one, a book written by one, I would recommend Darwin's Black Box. It's written by a secularist, and he has decided that scientists need to begin rethinking life from a secular viewpoint. The evolution just won't explain it. You have to understand that when Darwin was traveling around on the Beagle, remember the boat? And he was observing things. He wasn't doing that with a doctorate in microbiology. He wasn't doing that with a doctorate in biochemistry. He was just a fairly educated man who was making visual observations, and from those visual observations coming to scientific conclusions with no actual scientific method, without subjecting his conclusions to scientific methods. It's just poor science. And the science that they had at the time was very primitive. In other words, when Darwin saw small single-cell multicellular organisms in his primitive microscope, it seemed very simple that these three or four or five moving parts could have been independent chemicals, and they came together and became animated. But we know now that's not true, is it? We have DNA and RNA strands with millions upon millions of possible combinations. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Secularists give credence to the possibility of rapid evolution, megaleaps, while disdaining this same principle when it comes to God. Secularists will talk about, they've got to explain something. Secularists have to explain the fact that given their dating of Earth, there's not enough time for it to happen. They will all admit that. There's not enough time. It's actually caused a scientific crisis in the world's community when they began dating what the secular view of the creation of the world, dating when life first appeared, And now we have this advanced species called man. So, and now we know how many millions of years stand between those two. And there's just not enough time for it to happen. So they came up with this concept of megaleaps. You know, radiation, other things would cause evolutionary leaps in terms of development. Carl Sagan, he predates the high school students in here, college students in here, but he was the pop scientist of the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And even he came to the conclusion, and he was a staunch evolutionist, that there wasn't time. There was not enough time, not enough space, not enough opportunity. So he came up with the idea of alien insertion, that meteorite or something like that smashed into the earth and brought life. Of course, that doesn't solve the problem, though, does it? Where did that life come from? You have things like Star Trek's Genesis Project. You have 2001 Space Odyssey. Yeah, I can't keep up with all the different fantasies that Hollywood and the scientific community come up with to explain how life came to be here on Earth. But one thing they will all agree upon is that there's not enough time to bring it about. Now, the theory of evolution is that time and chance cause these amino acids and these different chemicals to animate. Can we all agree on that? But it took millions of years, didn't it, because of time and chance. Well, in the laboratory situation, though, we can compress that, can't we? We can compress those millions of years into, we should be able to do it, into years, or even hundreds of years, can't we? We should be able to force that into happening, shouldn't we? But they've never been able to do that. Which should bring into question the entire theory right there. So, here are reflective questions which I always ask secularists who believe in the theory of evolution. The first question I ask them is, do you believe in spontaneous regeneration? What is that? Do you know what? Have you studied that in biology? Spontaneous regeneration?
A lot longer ago.
Yeah. Remember, they used to... flies on the meat. You know, they used to think that flies or maggots spontaneously regenerated on meat. You put dead meat out there and left it out there. And then we have this great thinker. He comes along and he makes this glass. It's called a bell jar. And he puts it over the top of a piece of meat and leaves another piece of meat. And the piece of meat that's uncovered, maggots appear. So then he begins to think, what are some other reasons these maggots might appear? And he notices flies landing and mating and laying eggs. Thus, maggots do not spontaneously regenerate. But there is a scientific explanation for why there are maggots on the meat. Well, at that point, way, way back, in the late 1600s, early 1700s, the scientific community began laughing at spontaneous regeneration. It just will not happen. And so then we have Darwin coming up with a theory of evolution. And so now we move into the 20th century, and we get this scientist, and he has all these chemicals that he say represent early Earth and primordial Earth, and he begins firing electricity into that, and they come up with amino acids. Do you remember that in your science class? Amino acids, the building blocks of life. But what has to happen to those amino acids? Whether they are dead, they are inert, they are simply chemicals. What has to happen to them? What do they have to do? They have to spontaneously regenerate, don't they? We're talking about Frankenstein fantasy, aren't we? You know the story of Frankenstein? You know that, don't Luke? You know the story of Frankenstein? You know, they put him on, he's dead, and they fire electricity into him, and what does he start to do?
I'm alive.
I'm alive. That's right. That's right. All these different parts of all these different bodies, and they're going to spontaneously regenerate him and bring life into him through electricity. That is, I use this word technically, that is pure ignorance. It is based on an ignorance, not as an ignorance as in stupid, just an ignorance in a lack of information. An ignorant person is making decisions based on a lack of information. He may be genuine in his conclusions, but he's wrong because of his ignorance. And the ability to spontaneously regenerate life by thunderbolts striking inanimate objects is simply ignorant. Yeah?
Wouldn't it be a better word to use rather than ignorance to be a faith? Because you're trusting in something that you really don't have.
Well, yes, and we're going to talk about that. But that is a philosophical or mystical response to it. We're talking about pure, just bad science now. What you have to understand is that the conclusions that Darwin came to when he was sailing around in a sailing boat on the Beagle, he would not have come to if he had the scientific knowledge of the 21st century. He was simply ignorant. Of how complex cells were, he was ignorant of the use and value of electricity, because during this time period, people were just fascinated by electricity. It was kind of almost like magic to them. So good observation.
He also admits that in his Origin of Species, he's able to look at particular compounded cells, and he says if there's something that is missing here, if there's a link that I'm missing, with future scientific, or didn't use those particular words, but I'm rephrasing here, if there was a missing link that I'm not seeing, if there's a greater technology that can see these links, it's like most of my studies have been in vain. So he admits it.
Yeah. The problem is the studies that were done and the things that were discovered created more problems. Like, one of the things they were hoping to do with the atom smasher was they were hoping to get just a few simple building blocks of life. Well, when they did that and they found out there were hundreds, if not thousands, of these different quarks and other building blocks of life, a lot of the scientists who were involved in that project actually left the scientific field and went into philosophical and Eastern religions and religious fields, because they were suddenly faced with, no, there aren't just one, two, or three building blocks of life, which after the Big Bang could explain how we came up with the periodic chart. There were so many subatomic particles that no way is there time enough to end up with the periodic chart, more or less life. Well, that's the first question I always ask. I just raised my hand, and I started doing this in college. One of the things my dad did, he was a confirmed secularist and a confirmed evolutionist, and he was concerned because I was religious, and he asked me, anytime you take a science course, I have a BS from University of Texas, he said, anytime you take a science course, would you please make sure you take evolution? So I took evolutionary genetics, I took evolutionary astronomy, I took evolutionary geology, I took evolutionary zoology, I took evolutionary biology, I took all sorts of evolutionary classes. And like in my evolutionary genetics course, genetics was really fascinating. But then he got down to it, and he said, and we had this murky primordial soup, and there was lightning bolts, and there was volcanoes, and there was all this chaos, and we're not sure how, and we're not sure what happened, but suddenly animated life began. And I thought, what? That's a Frankenstein movie. I raised my hand. So you believe in spontaneous regeneration. You reject the scientific, no, then do it. You know, why don't we have laboratories all over the world with this soup. And 24/7, they're sending lightning bolts and they're heating it, doing, you know, it would just be within a couple of years, wouldn't we? Wouldn't it, that we suddenly at least get some form of single cell life? But it never has happened, hasn't it? We haven't even gotten an RNA or DNA strand. Nothing. Just chaos. Primordial chaos. The second question I ask, is it your contention that matter, left to itself, moves in increasing or decreasing order? Third law of thermodynamics. That's the question. Not, I'm not talking about philosophy, I'm not talking about religion, I'm not talking about mysticism. I'm just saying, you say that all matter came into existence at the Big Bang. Bam! Now, post-Big Bang, is it a scientific law that matter moves in the direction of order or of chaos?
Chaos.
Yeah, that's a scientific law. It does.
Yep.
Matter moves to disorder and entropy. Things wind out. Things get cold. Things run out of power. Things decay. Things rust. Yeah. Nothing has ever improved by itself, including the radiation experiments on fruit flies. Have you guys, do they still expose y'all to the in high school to the radiation experiments on fruit flies? Yeah, it was such a disaster, I was wondering when they were going to stop teaching that in high school. Exposed, over years and years, they kept exposing these fruit flies to radiation, waiting for Spider-Man to observe, you know, the super fruit fly. Waiting for, and all of the radiation mutations were bad. Not a single one of them created a stronger, bigger, healthier, more vibrant, more fruitful fruit fly. They all created terrible mutations. Godzilla never came out of the ocean, did he?
So you would say those experiments were fruitless then?
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
He never came out of the ocean. All we're left with is fantasy and imagination.
Good movie.
That is interesting.
The next question I asked, do you believe a scientific law can be established without subjecting itself to the scientific method? Do you believe that?
One goes with the other.
Right. They go hand in hand.
They go hand in hand.
And yet evolution has never been subjected to the scientific method.
Yes.
Double blind studies? Where are they? Multiple events able to be recreated by other scientists within the laboratory. A scientist just can't publish something and say, you know, I've discovered spontaneous regeneration. I've discovered an endless supply of energy. I have contained fusion. I've contained that. You just can't say you've done that. You have to publish the study. You have to have the proof. And this proof has to be able to be recreated in other laboratories. And it's never been done. It's never been done. Do you believe that strongly held prejudices, philosophies, or theories should be elevated to scientific law based on general acceptance? Is that okay? And of course, they would answer no to all of these things. And yet, to do so would make them say that evolution at best is an unproven theory. An unproven theory. And for a scientist to say, we have to believe this, because even though it's unproven science, we don't have any proven science to contradict it. No, that's not a scientific argument. That's not a science. There are no aliens because we don't have any proof of aliens. Would most secularists accept that as an argument? If somebody said, you believe in alien life, and you said, well, there's no proof of alien life, therefore I don't believe it, you would be laughed at. Is there a cure for cancer? Well, there's no absolute cure for cancer, so I don't believe there'll ever be a cure for cancer. You'll be laughed at, won't you? And yet, evolutionists will say right out front, you know, we don't have any alternatives to this, therefore we believe it. They embrace for themselves a worldview which they, in contradictory manner, laugh at other people for applying that same worldview to other disciplines. Yeah, Luke.
What's a secularist?
A secularist is someone who believes, who doesn't believe in God, who believes there is a non-spiritual answer to all of life's problems and issues. That would be a secularist. That's an excellent question, by the way. It's an excellent question.
Johnny, can you also define creationism?
Yeah. Creationism is the acceptance by faith of the creation account in Genesis chapter 1. The acceptance by faith of the creation account in Genesis chapter 1. But we are not studying creation in Genesis chapter 1 because my job description was to give why I do not accept evolution and at the same time give you ways of defending yourself if you don't accept evolution. And these four questions are four important questions that you should be able to ask any high school or college professor.
That's what I was about to ask you next, is that even when I was in college or before then or after then, there's obviously these two factions of people, if you will, the secularist and someone who's a believer, let's say, and they'll say there's opposing views based on their worldview, if you will, their view of the world and how we...
Now, I don't mind a secularist...
But they're always going to butt heads.
I don't mind a secularist saying... I accept the theory of evolution. I don't mind that. But that's not what's happening. Evolution has been elevated to the status of law. There is a conformity that's demanded of it in that if you don't believe in evolution, you're ignorant. You're dumb. You aren't accepting the facts. That's what bothers me. Somebody doesn't believe in God, they haven't received Jesus Christ as their personal Savior, I wouldn't expect them to be a creationist. And so if they want to come up with an alternative theory to explain the existence of life, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is when they cease treating it as an alternative theory and begin teaching it as a logical law, which evolution is not. It is not. So what is the trinity of the secularist? Now, in Christianity, we have a trinity, don't we? God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. And secularists will attack us because anytime there's something we can't explain, we say, well, you know, God the Holy Spirit hasn't revealed all of this to us in the Word of God. Or God the Son. Although we are born again and Christians, we don't have a perfect mind. We will have it someday. Or we say when we are in heaven, God the Father will explain all things to us. And so they accuse us of having blind faith and laugh at us, don't they? But you have to understand that when you're in a classroom, your secularist professor will have a trinity. Infinite time, infinite space, infinite imagination. And anything that cannot be explained in the immediate by the scientific method is put by faith into one of these categories. We'll give it more time. We will find the missing link. It's going to take more time. More, there'll be more archaeological discoveries. we'll be able to, it's there somewhere, we're going to be able to find it, we will be able to find it. We will give us more, we will be able to recreate evolution in the laboratory. You know, the talking chimp will appear. The turtle that moves from amphibian to mammal, it will happen. We will be able to get a turtle to end up being an armadillo. It's going to happen.
That sounds to me, John.
We will get the lizard to become a mouse, to become a shrew. It's just a matter, because you know, you've seen the evolution books, you know, and the kind of the shapes of the head, and you kind of go down, pretty soon you've got a man. We will be able to pull that off. We just need more time. Well, that's a statement of faith, isn't it? Or space. More, it's out there somewhere. The aliens are out there somewhere. The life, you know, it's out there. It may not be in our solar system, but there's life out there somewhere. You realize, of course, that all of the pictures of galaxies and planets and things like that that aren't actual photographs are artist renditions. You do realize that, don't you? I mean, we don't actually have a picture of these galaxies. We have the radio waves, which tell us there's something out there, which they recreate, you know, based on those radio waves, what they think that looks like. But you know those aren't real. When in the early 1960s, Time Life Books put out a whole series on the planets. And I remember opening up a section on Venus. And on Venus, below, you know, this canopy which could not be penetrated, this cloud canopy, you know, there's going to be this tropical forest. And they had the artist's rendition of all the different types of animals. And on Mars, they had the artist's rendition of the, you know, of all the types of primitive crustaceans and desert-dwelling animals that were on there. And these were artist renditions, and people, you know, that was real, wasn't it? But it turns out there's no life there, is there? There's no water. There's nothing. They are dead rocks floating in space. But what we have is infinite fantasy. We all know they're aliens. Have you seen Star Wars? And you seen Star Trek? So they're aliens, right? And you've seen the A&E specials and the Discovery Channel specials with the dinosaurs?
Yeah.
So you know exactly what they look like and how they act, don't they?
That's
don't
right.
you? And we've all seen Jurassic Park, haven't we? And seen the social Velociraptors? They're highly intelligent, aren't they? And they talk to each other, don't they? Of course, the only evidence we have of that are bones, but that doesn't matter. We've seen it, haven't we? And I mean, we've seen it all, infinite fantasy. And they will show you those. They'll show you Cro-Magnon man. They'll show you how he lived. They'll show you artist rendition of the evolutionary process. They'll show you all of these things. But it's fantasy. Now, when I was in elementary school, and you went into a natural history museum, and they had a dinosaur exhibit. Now, I'm not saying there aren't dinosaurs. There were dinosaurs. But when they had the exhibit, they would have the actual discovered dinosaur bones would be white. All the other bones in the skeleton would be a contrasting color, usually black, sometimes orange, but a very different color. So the reasoning man could see what was the actual bones that had been discovered and what was the artist's conception of what the complete skeleton would look like. That's all been done away with. They would show the head of a prehistoric man, and what they might have is part of a jawbone and a few teeth, and the rest of that skull would be a distinct contrasted color, you know, for the inquiring mind, so you would know what was real and what was... But that's all changed. You can go to the Natural History Museum in Houston. I challenge you to figure out what's real and what's fantasy.
That's good.
It'll be almost impossible.
I thought I was seeing the real monk.
Can you talk on the missing link? Since we're on the topic of anthropology, can you also mention that, like, how they're still talking shit? The talking shit. That's the missing link that we're missing.
Yeah.
The sciences are missing. Right. Still looking for that guy. Still looking.
Yeah, but see, we don't need to find him. All we have to do is get a chip and genetically figure out who's the most intelligent one. And let's breed him to another intelligent one. And then let's put them in intense laboratory learning situations. And from those most intelligent ones out of that brood, let's breed those two. And rather than just waiting for them to find each other wandering around on the face of the earth millions of years from now, we can compress it. And we should have been able to come up with that guy years ago.
I thought we had a talking chip.
Oh, no. No, infinite fantasy. You can see the talking chimp on a movie, can't you? You can see the talking chimp on TV. Infinite fantasy. Of course we have it. And then haven't you seen Planet of the Apes? See, of course we get it. See, but that's infinite fantasy, isn't it? The secularist believes if he can conceive of it, it must be true. Well, that's pure faith, isn't it? More space, that's faith, isn't it? More time, that's faith, isn't it? So I never let secularists accuse me of blind faith. Because they have their own trinity. Time, space, and fantasy. And you should remember that, and you should feel free to challenge them on it. They also cling in their theory to extreme contradictions of science, such as spontaneous regeneration. How do you explain spontaneous? Well, more time. No, can't say more time. Like in my, one of the things that made my evolutionary genetics professor at University of Texas so upset with me is he kept saying the word Mother Nature, and I kept raising my hand and saying, I'm sorry, this is a science class. Would you please not bring Greco-Roman religion into play? Please do not say. Please do not say Mother Nature. Please do not say that. After what is your explanation for this? You have just said we just really don't understand this, but Mother Nature, she just has a way of bringing this about. So I want to reject Mother Nature, Greco-Roman deity, and I would like you to explain to me scientifically what has occurred here in a way that can be reproduced in a laboratory. That's a valid question, isn't it? Isn't that a valid request? Reproducible in a laboratory. Well, if you'll look at Roman numeral 6, Carl Sagan had this phrase, the eternal cosmos, the infinite cosmos. And he would always say, that was his argument, is there are these billions and billions. And I have no problem.
Billions and billions. He was an editor.
And I have no problem with all of these stars and all these galaxies existing. I'm not saying they don't exist. What I have a problem with is establishing a scientific law based on ignorance. We can't prove it, but it's out there somewhere. That's the problem I have. If there's just given enough time, well, there's a phrase. There's a mathematical phrase, and what it is called infinite regress. Now, progress, what's progress? What direction is that? Not in front of it. Forward. What's regress?
Behind
it. So, now this is the problem with infinite regress. Here's my timeline. Let's take any point in time. Okay, I was born in 1951. So let's take that point in time. Here's a point in time. Now, infinite progress, we don't have a problem with, do we? We can start at this point in time, and then that everything can collapse and re-explode, and everything can collapse and re-explode. We have no problem with infinite progress, do we? But the theory of evolution says that timeline goes both directions. Are y'all familiar with the Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
Yeah, everything got compressed, it exploded. Third law of thermodynamics says it's going to run out of steam, isn't it? And then it's going to re-collapse and explode. And that has been going on for an infinite amount of time. Well, we have no problem with that as Christians in terms, or as scientists, in terms of the future, infinite progress. But what's the problem with infinite regress? What's the problem with that?
Can't explain it?
Well, you can't get here from there. Can you?
What do you mean?
What I mean is, we've got to get to 1951, right? Well, if we're at 500 BC, is that when we start forward?
I don't understand. Yeah.
All right. Now, we have a timeline.
Yeah.
1951.
Yeah.
Here's year zero. Here's 500 years before Christ, 500 BC. Now, from 500 BC to 1951, we can get there, can't we?
It's about 2,000 years.
About 2,000 years. But is that where we start?
No.
No.
Where we go back to 1,000 BC. No problem. We can still get there. Is that where we start?
No.
Okay. We go back to 1 million BC. We can get here, can't we?
Yeah.
Is that where we start?
No.
We go back to 1 trillion BC.
Isn't it still getting there?
What's the problem? Infinite regress. What does that mean? If time and space are infinite, you cannot get here from there. Because at every point on this timeline, when you turn around and say, now I'm going to get to 1951, what happens?
You get turned around.
You get getting pushed back. There's no starting point. Okay? So, this Big Bang Theory is based on a Christian worldview that there is a beginning, and a non-Christian explanation post-beginning. But the secularist cannot have a beginning. There is no God. There is no beginning, is there? Therefore, the past has been going on for how long?
Forever.
Therefore, there is no present. If the past is infinite, there is no present. It's impossible. It's a mathematical impossibility. We're not talking about philosophical impossibility. We're talking about one of the most simplest forms of mathematical measurement. That's a timeline. Zero.
We used to call it a
What's this? One. What's that? Plus, right? What's this? Negative one, right? What's that? Fourth grade mathematics.
Yep.
This is going this way. This is going this way. Infinite plus, no problem. Infinite regress, big problem. It's impossible to get here from there, from the infinite regress.
That's a good point.
So, now what is the Christian explanation for this? The Christian explanation is that time is a subset of God. Time and space exist within God. It is a created entity. Time had a beginning, and time will have an end. Creation had a beginning. Creation will have an end. And the regress is not infinite. Nor is the progress infinite.
But like you explained this, if I can interject, a couple of studies ago, you talked about that God's the only thing that's infinite is that God's existence is infinite and without time.
Right? That's right. God is the doctrinal attribute is that he is transcendent. He transcends time and space. Time and space are a subset. God is the only infinite thing. They say, well, isn't infinite regress a problem with God? No. Because God, Jesus said before Abraham was, I am. God just is. Within that is, there is a circle called time and space. Okay, great. Luke?
In Christian beliefs, what's like the starting point?
Pardon me?
What is the starting point?
Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning,
well,
God created.
Right?
Pardon me?
We don't know.
We don't know what year this is. But what we do know is that if you reject a starting point in time, you have to come up with a solution for infinite regress. You have to come up with a solution for that. And it cannot be philosophical. It has to be mathematical. A mathematical solution. Now, what they will say is, well, you know, space, you know, they're actually, you know, it's folded, you know, and it's a circle, and, you know, and then they begin saying, so, you know, we're just going in this big circle. What exists outside the circle? Well, nothing exists outside. Well, that's, now we're getting into mystical, philosophical views. I just want a simple explanation to infinite regress as it applies to the failed theory of evolution. When did it... Okay, you say it all began. When? Well, it began with the Big Bang. No. Big Bang. How is that going to collapse? Yeah, it's going to go on forever. Okay. It had to start. When did it start? Well, we don't know when it started. Well, no. There's no start to it. It's, you know... It collapses and explodes forever.
Don't those theorists, because I read at times in a magazine or something, that they'll say it's been adjusted from 4 billion years when I was a kid to now scientists say, well, it was 14 billion.
Well, there's still not enough time. Right. Yeah, but there's still not enough time. The big problem is whatever you do with that primordial seed, you're going to end up with that first explosion of, in their view, of primitive cell organisms, X millions of years ago. And there's not enough time to advance a troglodyte to a PhD in chemistry in X million years. There's not enough time. That's the problem. Pardon me?
What's a troglodyte?
Oh, it's one of the very primitive fossils that they found that they attribute to the early stages.
Yeah.
It looks like a horseshoe crab. They're supposed to be all over Mars. I've seen them in books. My dad gave me those books. He bought me the Time Life books. I've seen them.
We had a set of those books.
Yeah, they're all over Mars. I'm going to get one when I give this talk on campuses. I would like to get one because I have a number of books of scientific pretense.
John, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So you said in Isaiah, God says he refers to himself as I am.
Yeah, and Jesus quotes that in
right.
John 8.
So, in my very limited view, I see it as a present.
Yes, but what God is saying is, in terms of time and space, he is always in the present. In Revelation, it says there will come a time when time is no more. I say, how long will we live in heaven? Well, there won't be any time.
So can you say that
again? It just is.
So in time, he has always been present.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
Present.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Sure, good, excellent question, Joanna. Okay, let's look at number 7.
Yeah, it does.
How are we doing here? Yeah, we do. Let's look at number 7. Why I reject Darwin's theory of evolution as a scientific explanation. One, After 200 years of modern science, it remains an unproven theory. They haven't been able to pull it off. They haven't been able to animate amino acids, and they haven't been able to make one species jump. They haven't been able to make the reptile to mammal jump. They haven't been able to make anything that is, they haven't been able to make mice into horses. They just haven't been able to pull it out. Now somebody, what about the test tube baby? No. That didn't prove anything. They just took an existent egg and an existent sperm and fertilized it. You know what a test tube baby is? You create from raw chemical elements an egg. You create from raw chemical elements a sperm or an alternative to those things. You create the RNA and DNA strands yourself. That's a test tube baby. But what problem do you have there? It's still creationism, isn't it? So what do you need? You need to have just this primordial soup that these things come about in. Now, one of the arguments that creationists make is that there's just not, it just won't happen. But secularists will say, no, if you get me 100 million monkeys and you put in front of them 100 million typewriters and you have them type for 100 million years, somewhere out of all of that, one of Shakespeare's sonnets will occur just because of the random hitting. Well, of course, that can't be proven, can it? That's pure philosophy. But that's not the problem, is it? See, what you would have to say, if you take a million Scrabble pieces and put them in a million different tumblers, and you tumble them and tumble them and tumble them and pour them out and tumble them, pretty soon a sentence will come out. But that's not the problem, is it? Because you've already got the Scrabble pieces. What you have to say is, you take ink and sawdust and put it in a tumbler and tumble it and tumble it and tumble it. Pretty soon you will have a Scrabble piece and more Scrabble pieces. And then those Scrabble pieces will finally fall into place and be a sentence.
That's not
going to happen, is it? That's what you have to do to get amino acids to create a DNA or RNA strand. That's what has to happen. It's not monkeys hitting on typewriters. Man, that's way down the line. It's ink and wood and some dyes all being mixed together in a washing machine. And out of it comes a Scrabble piece board with all the words. So, after 200 years of modern science, it remains an unproven theory. Second, it's a simplistic view based on 19th century positivism. There was a real movement, philosophical movement in the 19th century called positivism. It was characterized, by one writer, every day and every way I'm getting better and better. I really thought that. It's inherited bigoted both racially and sexually. I reject the theory of evolution because it's a racist view.
Amen.
It is. So what, after monkeys, what do you have? Australoids. You have the primitive Australian species. And then after that, what do you have? You have Africans, don't you? Don't they kind of look like apes? And then after that, what do you have?
White.
You have, no, you'll have more of the Latin and the Asian. So you come in. And then after that, what do you have?
And
then you have Charles Darwin. That's racist.
You're white
so
that's completely
so you're
a Christian
white.
Completely reject any comparison of African Americans to primitive apes. Well, I completely reject that. Now, are you sitting? See the form she's sitting in? Now stand up. Stand up, please. Stand up. Step aside, please. See this chair? It's kind of in the same form, isn't it? I reject any evolutionary comparison between her and the chair. Emma and the chair. I reject it. So, it's inherently racist and bigoted, and was used, the evolutionary theory was used to hunt down the Aboriginal people of Australia and kill them like animals. It was used as an excuse to enslave African Americans. It was used by the Spaniards to enslave and execute the Indios of Central, South, and Latin America. It's been horribly used. It was used by the socialists. Of course, you know the Nazi Party is the National Socialist Party. Hitler's party was a socialist party. Then you had the Communist Party, which is also a socialist party. They were both evolutionists, and they were used to slaughter, the theory of evolution was used to slaughter millions of people to advance the species. See, evolution leads eventually to a moral madhouse. Why do I say that? Luke, why do I say that? Why would I say that evolution leads to a moral madhouse?
Because it doesn't make any sense, has no proof.
Yeah, but morally. Why would it?
What do you mean morally?
Well, morals, you know what morals are.
Yeah. Right, I've been on that.
Rights and wrongs.
Well, just look at just on that point, the title of The Origin of Species is this. This is the full title. On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life.
That's exactly right. It's a moral madhouse. What are the two prime directives of evolution?
Survival of the fittest.
Survival of the other ones.
Natural selection.
Advancement of the gene pool.
Yeah.
Natural selection is how it happens. But what you want to do is the superior genes advance over the inferior ones.
Hey, real quick, can I say something?
So why do we not have rape trials for dogs?
Because they're morally incapable of understanding it's wrong.
Morality? There's no morality.
Because we don't judge dogs.
Morality? What do you mean morality? Morality? You can't scientifically explain morality.
They're not held to a moral standard like humans are.
Well, but if you're an evolutionist, humans are animals.
Oh, because we're superior.
Now, you see, if you are a secularist, if you are an evolutionist, you have to accept the validity of rape as the advancement of the gene pool. The stronger males weed out the weaker males. They mate and dominate the female of the species. And thus the species grows stronger. That's evolutionary genetics. Now, it works when you're talking about animals. But secularists say we're an animal too. So all moral laws violate the two prime directives of evolution, don't they? Advancement of the gene pool. Survival of the fittest. How do laws fit in? Now, as Christians, we know how laws fit in that. Because we are not simply an object of evolution. We are created in God's image and held accountable to God, who has given us his laws and has said that women are not inferior to men, that rape is sin. We have God's laws. We have that all men are created in the image of God, that there may be diversity in terms of African American, Asian, Hispanic, Indo, Mediterranean, Norwegian, all these different pseudo classifications that have no scientific basis. In the late 60s, my dad was in clinical research with the Upjohn Company, and they were trying to determine the racial reaction to drugs. In other words, if you have a drug that works with Anglos, will it work equally with African Americans? Will it work equally with Asians? And what did they find out?
Yes.
No, they're just visual classification.
No difference is what you're saying.
Yeah. There's no difference between an African American male and an Anglo male, except visual differences.
Yeah.
You're saying genetically.
Oh, yeah. Genetically, they're the same. They're the same. Now, we say genetically they're the same in terms of their basic genetic makeup. Genetically, you are different from this young man because you have black hair and he has blonde hair, but we don't have to test blonde-haired men versus black-haired men in terms of how penicillin will react with them because your basic biological makeup is the same. And there is no scientific division of human life. There is no scientific division of that. There is only visual observation. So, the consistent application of evolution to the human race will result in a moral madhouse. Because you will have to say there is no God, and man got to where he is today in terms of evolutionary advancement by the advancement of the gene pool, didn't he? By survival of the fittest, didn't he? Therefore, man must be free from the constraints of laws in order to advance further. Isn't that true? Therefore, all moral laws are a drag or inhibitor on the advancement of the human species, if evolution is true. If evolution is true. The propagation of the gene pool and the survival of the fittest is the prime directive. We as Christians, we reject both of those. See, evolutionists will still hypocritically cling to such Christian terms as love, free will, good, evil, right, wrong, stewardship of the earth, marriage, faithfulness, honesty, and more. They'll give credence to all those things and yet explain them by evolution. And why do we not hold dogs to the same standard? They say they can't know right from wrong. Sure they can. Can you make a dog sit?
Yes.
If your dog pees in the kitchen, doesn't he know it was the wrong thing to do?
Only if you get it right when he does it.
Yeah. So what you have here then is pure hypocrisy. When is man an animal to the evolutionist?
When you do something wrong.
No, man is an animal. Man is an animal when it's convenient. Abortion, promiscuity, homosexuality, rebellion against God, there is no God. When freedom from the constraints of God's law, that's when man is an animal. When is man not an animal? He's a higher form of life. Well, conservationism, being a member of the Green Party, getting married, love, honesty, faithfulness, laws, murder, rape, incest, all these other things. Now man's not an animal anymore, is he? He's held to a higher standard. But no, he is an animal. But no, he's not an animal. But, it's pure hypocrisy. It's a moral madhouse. Christians have an answer for this. The evolutionists don't. See, Darwinism was and is a lifestyle seeking a theory to free it from the constraints of God's laws in certain areas, but not all areas. And they will use these nonsensical terms like, well, laws are a form of evolution. No, that's not true. Love is not a form of evolution. To the evolutionist, love must simply be an enzyme. Love must simply be an internal chemical reaction. We are all the random organization of atoms resulting in random organization of molecules resulting in random organization of species. Or there's a God and there is law. But I really hold, when somebody says they don't believe in God, I really hold their feet to the fire in terms of their moral standards. How can they have, how can there be any laws? What we must do is unleash all of mankind to rape, murder, pillage, dominate, and move him forward to that next level of super species, you know, where we all talk telepathically, and we don't have hands, we just have little flippers, and, you know, we travel at light speed and stuff like that. All laws inhibit our evolution to the next level, don't they? Isn't that true, logically? Can you teach evolution or zoology or life science without using non-scientific pseudo-mystical terms? Mother Nature. Remember, I had asked my genetics professor, please don't use Greco-Roman deities to explain this science. What's another one? Instinct. How do ants form these giant colonies? What's the magic word?
Instinct.
How do bees form into these colonies and make honey and always find their way back? What's the magic word?
Instinct.
How do the swallows go from, you know, the northern hemisphere down to the southern hemisphere and back? What's the magic word? Instinct. How do the pelicans go down into South Central Africa and Zambia and that area just in time for the rains and lay their eggs and raise their young and then take off and leave again? They always come up. What about the turtles? What about the whales?
Just know it's inherent.
It's instinct, right? That's not science. Show me the instinct gene. Where's that? That's not science. Now, God, there's explanation in the Bible for why they do those things, because that's, God says he created them to do those things as part of his work. But yeah, I would not let any of my science teachers ever use the word Mother Nature or instinct. Yeah, Luke.
So why is it that, like, I know this is a little off track, but caterpillars, they kind of turn, they do turn into butterflies. How is that not evolution?
Well, you see, I've got a better question for you. How can that ever be evolution?
Because they're one.
When you had to have this first pseudo caterpillar, this worm that was crawling around eating things, that all of a sudden started weaving webs, and then after a while he wove a web around himself that became heart, right? And while he was in there, he became. How does that ever happen? Learned habits? We're talking about a caterpillar. Doesn't even have a brain. See, what you're doing is you're projecting a human inside that caterpillar.
But, John, we said they're going to learn habits. How would that caterpillar know what another caterpillar can learn? Because he would only know if this caterpillar wasn't a butterfly yet, so he can't learn the process.
Well, but besides that, you have an entire genetic transformation. How is that going to happen by chance? How is that going to happen? Just take the egg, a chicken hatching an egg. How is that going to evolve? As long as we don't think about the details, right? As long as we just sit back and make it a theory where we look at the big picture. Yeah, that could happen. But then you start talking about the details. Start talking about the details, it all falls apart. All falls apart. Because we're going to run out of time. Another thing you asked your professors not to use is the word mystery. They can use mystery when it comes, when they're talking about ignorance. But when mystery equals magic or mysticism, I'll raise my hand. I'm sorry. Mystery? So you don't know. Oh, no, we know it happens. It's just a mystery. No, you don't know. Just say, we don't know. I had a lot of fun in school. Self-evident. There are no self-evident sciences. There is science that has been subjected to the scientific method, and there is not science. That's what there is. I love science. I love the scientific method. I love logic. I love my logic courses. That's why I hate evolution. It is not science. It is not logic. It is emotion and theory and philosophy and poor excuses for it. Evolutionists make presuppositions to which they have no right. The first is a starting point. All evolutionists begin a starting point. They don't have any right to do that. It's an infinite regress. They have an ending point. They have no right to do that. They have no right to say, like we were at the planetarium and he said, now what you have to understand is in 4 trillion years the galaxy is going to collide with another, Milky Way is going to collide with another galaxy. They have no right to say that. They have neither the information nor the data nor the experience to say what is happening now will still be happening in the same way a million years from now, more or less than a trillion years. Evolutionists reject infinite regress of both time and space. Evolutionists have to be able to explain the infinite division of matter. What do I mean by that? Okay. We cut this in half, right? Then we cut it in half again. Then we cut it in half again. When do you get to a point where it can't be any smaller? No. If you're an evolutionist, you don't. So there's never any basic building block of life. They're giving themselves to the basic building blocks of life. But when they get to that, then they have to cut that out in half and find out what that is made of. Thus you get Men in Black. How many of you have seen Men in Black? See? That's the infinite regress of division, isn't it? We're all living on a molecule inside a marble, and we think it's our galaxy. See? Because it also has to do with the infinite expanse of matter, isn't it? Evolution doesn't have any answers for any of these problems. Morality, conscience, emotions, feelings, a worldview, right and wrong. Evolution does not have any answers for these. And so what it does is, it's inherently hypocritical. When it's philosophically convenient, there is morality. When it's lifestyle inconvenient, there's no morality. And it results in the madhouse of Hitler's extermination of the Jews because the Jews were an inferior race. It results in the moral madhouse of Stalin's starving 5 million Ukrainians in one winter because of evolution, where it's biological mechanism, isn't it? It's biological mechanism. So, in order to produce a better species of chickens, you have a giant chicken breeding ground with a million chickens on it, and then you want to weed out all but the 20 best. There's no more immorality in that, is there? You just kill them all and you sell them, and you keep the 20 best, and then you start breeding again. Well, according to evolution, we too are chickens. And that's why Marxist-Leninism, socialism, secularism can kill the elderly, they can kill babies, they can kill inferior races, inferior so-called species of people. They can be enslaved. They can be dominated. It doesn't matter, because it all is the survival of the fittest and the advancement of the gene pool. It is a moral madhouse and must be rejected. Must be rejected. So, I want to thank you for your time. Kevin, would you close us in prayer, please?